Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's time for the weekly gathering of the Dakota Political Junkies. We find some of the best political reporters in the state. We'll go to Jonathan Ellis with Sioux Falls Argus Leader Media. Jonathan, thanks for being here.
Hey, I'm here.
All right. John Hunter, are you with us?
I am.
All right. Thanks for being here. We're all on board now. Let's start with the 70% lawmaker pay raise proposal. Jonathan Ellis, you want to kick us off with what that's all about?
Well, most people probably don't realize that lawmakers in South Dakota get about, I think they get $6,000 a year, and that's their salary. And that has not been increased since 1999, if I got the correct year. 1999, I believe. And so, you know, so there's been a proposal. It's obviously anytime you vote for, you know, vote yourself a pay raise, you know, it's sort of like a, you know, political suicide, I guess. I mean, just it's something that politicians don't like to do because voters kind of hold them accountable for that. Voters don't want politicians to get pay raises. So it's one of those things that politicians are often really reluctant to do. I mean, the proposal that they have now would tie lawmaker pay to what the U.S. Census Bureau has as sort of household medium household income. And so I think that would increase from 6,000. What the current plan would be, would increase it from 6,000 to just a little bit over $10,000 per year. You know, I think there's a lot of good reasons to increase lawmaker pay. I mean, it's one of those situations where you do get what you pay for. And there have been some, you know, on both Republicans and Democrats in the past, some younger lawmakers who really can't afford to take the time out to do a legislative session because, you know, they can't, you know, whether it's for the business, that kind of thing. And so, you know, you are sort of, by limiting the amount of pay, you are sort of limiting then the people who can actually go to peer and represent the people in writing laws. And so I think that over the years, I think that, you know, the quality probably of lawmakers has suffered because we're not getting the type of people that maybe we would want to see, you know, the right mix of people involved in writing laws. So, you know, I think there's a compelling argument. I think as long ago as 5 or 6 years ago, I wrote a column advocating for pay increases, and I think there's a good reason for them.
And 6 years later, they listened to you?
No.
I'm just kidding.
No. Nobody listens to me ever. But
so what's the shelf life of a Jonathan Ellis column? That's pretty
good.
Right.
But no, I mean, it's just because the issue comes up periodically.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
John Hunter, it does make headlines in the sense, and it can cause grumbling and such, but how important is this conversation about really how much we're paying our lawmakers?
Well, I think Jonathan hit it on the head. It's not something that legislators, it's favorable for them to bring it up of their own pay raise. You know, Congress goes through this same thing, and they kind of smartly tied that to some kind of growth over time rather than letting it sit at $6,000 per year for 19 years and then try to raise it by some amount that, you know, at that point you don't want to raise it by 1% if you haven't done it for two decades. So, you know, Congress raised it, bit the bullet, and then tied it to some inflation adjustment or something. And there's actually a companion bill in the South Dakota legislature, I think it'll be introduced, that will do the same thing. But it's, you know, even though the 70% sounds outrageous, it's, you know, it's a kind of a modest salary to start with, so I don't think it's a huge deal. I think it's possible that it would go through. And it depends a little bit on the times of South Dakota. You know, I think since they passed the teacher pay thing, that would be a little bit more palatable now. I think if they tried to do this 2 years ago and said, hey, our teachers are underpaid and you're giving yourself a raise, what's the deal? Right. It depends on the state's economy. There's a lot of things that factor into it.
John, where does the money come from?
Well, it would be an appropriation. I mean, you would need to do that as well. I think part of what Jim Bolin wants to say is that even though they're part-time state employees, they should be treated a little bit more in terms of kind of the state salary policy and, you know, just be when they pass bills that increase state employees' pays, that the legislature would be part of that. But that's part of the the general fund, as it were, and has to go through the regular appropriations process.
So I'm wondering, John Hunter, if this ties into in any way Speaker Mickelson's plans and lawmakers' plans to have a legislative speech, coming up as well. Are we just really looking at raising the profile in some ways? You want to give us some background on that, and then we can talk about the potential impact of that speech.
Yeah, I think there might be a relationship there. Each year during the state legislative session, then the governor gives a State of the State address, and then the Chief Justice gives a State of the Judiciary. So essentially, you have two of the three branches of government giving their kind of outlook or a state of that. And I think what Mark Mickelson wants to do is get the legislative and legislature involved in that. Now there's 105 legislators, so you don't want 105 extra speeches on opening day. So I think he would propose selecting a few people to do that. But most importantly, maybe, is to try to find some common goals and talk about those. So let's say Democrats and Republicans both agree that something needs to be done about teacher pay or something. They may not agree on the details, or if it's a tenth of a percent or 5% or whatever it is, that if they can agree on some common goals or things that they want to work on. You know, there has been, and this is pure opinion on my part, but there certainly has been a shift of power to the executive branch in recent decades. In fact, it wasn't that long ago for someone my age who said, you know, the governor's position used to be a two-year position. It was almost like, let's pick a legislator, let's make him governor for a couple of years, and then we'll go on with that. Finally, it was a four-year. Governor Knipe was the first four-year governor. But remember, part-time citizen legislators, you're out there for 2 months plus a couple other occasions, summer studies and so forth, where the executive branch is working year-round, full-time staff and all that sort of stuff. So I think, yes, I do think Mark is trying to raise the legislature's position in all this and try to balance it out with other branches.
Jonathan Ellis, do you think that, what do you make of that? Does it show vision for the future of the South Dakota State Legislature?
Well, I mean, it shows, I think the speech is, I mean, that's kind of symbolic, and symbols are important sometimes. I think that where it's perhaps more important for the legislature, and by the way, there have been rumblings or mumblings about the weakness of the legislative branch for quite a while, so that's not new, and that's by design. I mean, South Dakota, the founders of South Dakota created, as John said, it was a citizen legislature, a very brief window of time in which they're in pure actually making laws. And the power is always, by design, resided with a strong executive. South Dakota is one of the strongest executive branches in the country, and that only got stronger, as John pointed out, when the governors were elected to four-year terms. Where I think that the legislature would have some room in terms of exerting some greater power would perhaps be, and one of the things they're doing is hiring some more full-time staff to help them out. They have a very limited staff in terms of, who help write bills and research issues. But, so right now, when it comes time to budget, and really, I mean, the power of the purse is where the legislature's at in appropriating money. And, they get a lot of the information on in terms of where money is going to go and how what should be spent from the executive branch. And so for the legislature to sort of bolster the people that they have, doing fiscal analysis and things like that, that's where they probably could have an opportunity to have a little more independence.
We've danced around the topic of teacher pay a little bit as we talk about lawmaker pay and recent moves by the state legislature. So let's talk about how we're following up or how lawmakers are following up. And again, Mark Mickelson comes into play here. John Hunter, what are they looking at exactly as far as where those pay raises are ending up?
Well, as you remember, a session or two ago when the state legislature authorized increase in teacher pay, they really redid a lot of the, there are a lot of details that went with that, not just kind of handing out more money to use. And so they put parameters in place that said, we're going to appropriate you more money, but you need to use it for this purpose. You don't want it. They didn't want school districts to put it in the bank or use it on building projects and so forth. That's been a back and forth between school districts, which have local control, right, with local school boards. But again, as the state became more prominent in funding, they put more rules about what the local school boards could do. So, and there, you can hear every few sessions where they'll do some analysis and say, look, school districts in South Dakota have X dollars tucked away in reserve, and they're not using them, using the money as we saw fit. So, long answer to a short question is Mark Mickelson then is saying, look, if these people aren't using this money as we, you know, we set out very specific parameters on how to do this, if they're not using it, they better have a good excuse for it. And I like the fact that he said that, where he said, look, if there's a legitimate excuse that says why they didn't do that, they should get a pass. But he said if they just didn't do it because they chose not to do it, then there should be some sort of a consequence for that. And there could be, you know, reduced funding in some other format or whatever that might be. So that's what they're really trying to do, is make sure school districts are playing by the rules that the legislature set up for them.
Jonathan Ellis, let's talk about switch to higher education and continue the conversation about the law school and some of those conversations that were held about whether or not the law school from USD should move to Sioux Falls or not. Representative Mark Mickelson with the executive board said that the labor unions and some of the responses from some of the professors troubled him. Give us an update on that, please.
Yeah, Mark Mickelson is proposing that perhaps there should not be collective bargaining in the state's university system for faculty members, and I think he came to that conclusion, so he says, during the whole law school debate, he found out that there were law school professors who were unwilling to teach night classes or to teach classes on weekends, which, of course, might be... from a service perspective, might be better for some students, particularly those who have to work on, and also go through law school. So he was frustrated by that, that there were some collective bargaining provisions in their contract about teaching. I'm frankly not surprised that, you know, the Republicans would be taking a look at collective bargaining within public institutions. I'm frankly surprised they haven't done more in this area, given their animosity towards collective bargaining. There's some other states that have moved, like Wisconsin, most famously, to remove public employee unions. And so, in South Dakota, and probably across a lot of the rest of the country, I mean, unionism has diminished in the private sector, but is flourishing in the public sector. And so, it's interesting that. To me, that Republican lawmakers haven't made greater strides from the Republican perspective of trying to rein those in South Dakota. So I think that this is another, this is a step toward that.
Mm. John Hunter, what do you make of that conversation?
Well, I do think it's in direct response to the law school thing, and I think Mark was frustrated by the process that took on, where essentially that faculty that spoke up, said, you know, we don't have to do anything because we have this collective bargaining agreement. It actually, unlike most public unions, it does not include pay negotiations. That's already barred from that. So really, it's tenure guidelines and, patterns for complaints and, dismissal and those kinds of things. So I think it's just a reaction to that, and the law school moving was a controversial thing. It was frustrating for people anyway. I mean, there were all sorts of people chiming in on that anyway. So I think Mark was frustrated with the faculty's response to that.
And John, there's a little seed in there that just fascinates me, and that's the notion of working nights and weekends, and some of the conversations we've had about the difficulty to recruit lawyers and the difficulty to bring people into professions where so much is asked of them. Our society is changing in a lot of ways.
Well, Lori, you work nights and weekends, don't you?
I do, and days, and sometimes mornings.
Yeah, I'm afraid we all do. So, yeah, I mean, in some cases, they probably should be collectively bargained. In other words, you wouldn't have, I don't think, kind of different employment rules for business school professors as you would law school professors, or different rules for education teachers at Northern and education teachers at Dakota State. So some of that stuff, I do think makes sense to have a kind of a common guidelines for those kind of employment things. Or, you know, here's the process if a professor needs to be dismissed or if they have a complaint about the way they're being treated or something like that. So I don't think it's a bad thing to have some sorts of collective agreements. I think we see, you know, things going on strike, you know, during the Olympics or something, sanitation workers go on strike or something, these high-profile things that drive us crazy. But I don't think this is, I don't think it's particularly harmful in South Dakota.
John Hunter is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Jonathan Ellis is with Argus Leader Media in Sioux Falls. John Hunter, thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Lori.
Jonathan, thank you as well. Always a pleasure. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you, Lori.